our series on rebuilding the wall as we look and walk through the book of defeating external discouragement. And we're going to look at discouragement over the next three Sundays specifically. There's just so much we can look at on discouragement that I was able to split it up. And so we're going to look at that over the next few weeks. And so this morning we're specifically looking at external discouragement and how to defeat that. And this morning we're going to be in Nehemiah 4. Specifically, we're going to be verses, let me pull out this, 1 through 8, if you want to turn there. I will be kind of jumping around that area this morning in my notes and referencing different verses throughout that chapter there. So if you want to turn there to follow along, that would be fantastic. If you don't, that is okay as well. So I assume we're all really familiar with Murphy's Law, right? It's something that we kind of grow up being introduced to. But the original Murphy was actually an engineer. He was actually a man, and he was an engineer. And he is famous for the quotation, "If anything can go wrong, it will go wrong," okay? I guess the idea is also true. If anything can't go wrong, it will anyway. So, here are some other laws blamed on poor Murphy. So he wasn't just put into that one law. He kind of had some more. So some of them are, left to themselves, things tend to go from bad to worse. Okay? Another one is, matter will be damaged in direct proportion to its value. Another is, you will never find a lost article until you replace it. And then anything or everything goes wrong all at once. And the last one, if anything seems to be going well, you've obviously overlooked something. And that's kind of what we're looking at today in Nehemiah 4, the beginning of Nehemiah 4. As we come to this chapter, everything kind of starts seeming to go wrong all at once for Nehemiah, okay? As we look back a little bit, in chapter 1, we looked at how Nehemiah prayed, okay? Nehemiah started off strong. He was praying. In chapter 2, we saw how God moved him from the prosperity of Persia to the desolation of Jerusalem, okay? And things were going fantastic for him. Last week, we were introduced to the wall workers and discovered that in kingdom work, no one can do everything, but everyone can do something, right? And because of some work, and because some work harder, and Brock worked with more zeal than anyone else, the construction project was really zipping along, okay? And that's kind of where we left off last week. Things were moving. Things were happening. There was a lot of excitement. But when we come to chapter 4, things start to get more complicated for Nehemiah. So Mr. Murphy shows up and reminds Nehemiah that when everything seems to be going well, you've obviously overlooked something, okay? This idea kind of reminds me of a situation that took place several years ago in Darlington, Maryland, okay? Edith, who was a mother of 8 kids, came home one Sunday afternoon from her neighbor's house, only to discover 5 of her youngest children huddled together in the living room, intensely concentrating on something, which, if I saw my kids being that quiet and that intense, I would be worried as well. Well, as she slipped in behind them to see what they were doing, okay, she couldn't believe her eyes. Smack dab in the middle of her kids were several baby skunks, okay? Well, of course, her reaction was to scream at the top of her voice and say, "Children, run!" So each kid, of course, grabbed a skunk, and ran to their bedroom, isolated. But we see, if anything can go wrong, it certainly will. They were surrounded by these skunks, and the mother's hope and desire to relieve them from these skunks and get them away just caused them to take the skunks with them. Because the kids didn't know what they were doing. The kids thought they were just cute little animals, I'm sure. But if anything can go wrong, it certainly will. So this morning, did you know that there is a plague sweeping our country? And no, I'm not talking about COVID, okay? This outbreak can be just as deadly as the most dreaded disease known to man, okay? It's called an epidemic of discouragement. And that's what we are looking at over these next few weeks. So, there's at least three things that make it such a potent problem, okay? One, it's universal. None of us are immune to discouragement. Everyone you have ever known, ever, has been discouraged at one point in their life, okay? The second is it's reoccurring. Being discouraged once does not give you immunity to the disease of being discouraged again. You can be discouraged over and over again. In fact, you can be discouraged by the fact that you are being discouraged, okay? So it's almost a continued cycle, can seem to be. And the last part is, it's highly contagious, okay? Discouragement spreads. Even just through casual contact. Like you see someone you know and they're discouraged, it can kind of rub off on you. People can become disheartened because they are discouraged. You can get bummed out because other people are discouraged. And ultimately, then you may discourage somebody else. But this morning, we're going to focus on specifically the causes of external discouragement. So, there's really two main types of discouragement. One set of problems come to attack us from the outside, so the external. And one set attacks us from the inside, which would be internal, right? Well, this morning we're specifically looking at the external. Next week I think we're going to be looking at the internal. So, we see that the wall workers were initially excited, right? They were excited. Nehemiah did a fantastic job to get them geared up to tackle on something that they had no prior knowledge of doing. None of these guys, or the majority of the workers, were not masons, they were not construction workers or anything like that. They had different jobs. So the wall workers were initially excited. They begin the work with great anticipation and great joy. It says of them in verse 6 that the people worked with all their heart, okay? Things were going well for the people. They were excited. And the wall was going up. That's huge. That was their goal, was to get the wall. So when they can see that happening, that's a great sign. But something happened, okay? Getting the work started on the wall was a major achievement. But keeping the workers working proved to be a much tougher assignment. Someone has said that exhilaration is that feeling you get just after a great idea hits you and right before you realize what's wrong with it, okay? So, where God is at work, we have to believe, as believers, that who is at work? The enemy is at work. Rebuilding the wall of Jerusalem was certainly no exception to this, church. When people take kingdom priorities seriously, Satan stirs up allegations, agitations to block the word of God. Okay? That's his only defense. When people take, these enemies use two types of external forces. Satan uses two types of external forces, really. I called them the two R's. And the first one this morning that we're going to look at is ridicule. Ridicule. I still don't think I'm saying that right. Ridicule. Did I say it? Yeah, Dan got me. So anytime we are encouraged to work for God, we are likely to encounter the poison-tipped arrows of ridicule, okay? A barrage of truth that's mingled with lies. And gossip is the normal experience of believers, okay? Malice arises from fear. And fear is a common response to someone else's success. So, we can assume to expect to have our faults at some point in our lives thrown in our face, maybe our folly mocked, and our progress maybe belittled, okay? When this happens, we must be able to receive that criticism, but we don't have to let it define us. We don't have to let it dismay or intimidate us, right? Because it can help us grow. Criticism can help us grow, right? Remember that the chorus of contempt has a diabolical conductor whose aim is to make your knees buckle, okay? He likes tongue-tied Christians. They're ineffective. They're ineffective Christians and play on the secret he likes to prey on the secret fears and infirmities to make us one of them, someone who's ineffective, right? That's the enemy's goal. Yet, in those moments when we have refused to listen to him, and who's him? Satan, those lies, and have feebly walked in obedience, with God, we are astonished at what God has done with our feeble performance. Because who's actually working through us? It's God. We're just here for his use. Well, there's a story about a man who hid for 32 years fearing punishment of pro-Nazi wartime activity. And he says he used to cry when he heard happy voices outside, but dared not show himself even at his mother's own funeral. Okay? Jonas Russ was a young shoemaker, okay, when he went into hiding at his sister's farmhouse in June of 1945. He was found years earlier, he was found years later after she bought a large supply of bread in the nearby village of Zalan. He said, "If I had not been discovered, I would have remained in hiding, so I am happy that this happened." Russ told a reporter, "Throughout those years, he did nothing. He never left the house and could only look down at the village in the valley. He was hiding in fear. He was hiding from being, I guess, ridiculed or persecuted. But in his hiding, what was he doing to himself? He was keeping himself from being able to live." If we see and we look at verse 1 and 2 of Nehemiah 4, which is where we're going to start, we see Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding. He says in verse 1 through 2, "When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly upset. He ridiculed the Jews." So, we've heard this name multiple times. This is the third time in the book that we come across Sanballat, who was Nehemiah's stiffest opposition, okay? Every time we read about him, he is standing against the work of God, rejecting ridiculing everything that Nehemiah is trying to accomplish. Okay? Someone has said that ridicule is the language of the devil. Those who can stand bravely when shot at will collapse when they are laughed at. Okay? The enemy often insults the servants of God. If we see, Goliath ridiculed David when the shepherd boy met the giant with only a sling in his hand. That was Goliath's attack on David. We also see the soldiers mock Jesus during his trial, and we also see the crowd taunting him while he was hanging on the cross. Sanballat and his cronies had begun to ridicule the workers even before the work started in chapter 2, verse 19. So even before any of the work was started, he was already ridiculing them. Okay? And says, 2:19 says, they mocked and ridiculed us. So here, at the beginning of chapter 4, he's making a speech before the army of Samaria and testifying the power of ridicule. So, if we notice what he said when we read verse 1 and 2, he called the workers feeble, okay? The word means withered and miserable. So next, he ridiculed the job they were doing by asking four taunting questions to the two of them. These questions were, will they restore their wall? They must have made the Samaritan army break out in laughter. Okay, that must have brought laughter to them. Will they restore their wall? How could a remnant of feeble Jews hope to build a wall strong enough to protect the city from a mighty army? Because who was building the wall? Not construction workers. Not people who had any prior knowledge of how to build a successful wall. The second question he asked, will they offer sacrifices? Sanballat is saying that it will take more than prayer and worship to rebuild the city. It'll take sacrifices. It'll take more than what they're doing to protect them. The third question was, will they finish in a day? This suggests that the workers had no idea how difficult the task was and would soon stop what they were doing. They were excited to begin, right? They had an encouragement, they had a desire to finish, and they were working hard. But they're not going to finish the wall in a day, right? But they were working like they would. They were working so hard that it was perceived, oh, they're going to finish this in a day. Well, that's a joke, right? And it was. He was showing them that they're not going to finish it in a day. And the last question he shares is, can they bring these stones back to life? So this indicates that the building materials were so old and damaged that they couldn't possibly be used to make a strong wall. The wall had crumbled. The wall was deteriorated, okay? Which means they couldn't just use what was there to make a new wall. They had to bring in new material, which is a lot more work, right? There's a big difference from picking up a big boulder that's right at the wall and setting it back in place versus having to go bring it from a really long ways away and transport it there. So, we see all these questions being asked. In verse 3, it was Tobiah's turn to ridicule the workers when he tried out a joke on them. He says, what are they building? If even a fox climbed on it, he would break down their walls of stone. It was a joke on what they were trying to build. This wall was not going to even hold up a fox. It's interesting. Archaeologists' excavations on these walls have revealed that they were 9 feet thick. Okay? That's huge. I mean, super thick. So they would need more than a small fox to knock them down. I mean, that's for sure. The workers became the punchline of every joke, and everyone got a laugh at their expense. Okay? Tobiah hoped that his sarcasm would make the builders cast an apprehensive glance at their hard work and activate within them an avalanche of discouragement. So, church, whenever we attempt to get involved in the work of God, we will face ridicule. It's going to happen. Expect it, but don't stop working. Continue to lean on God for His strength. So, the next one after ridicule is repression. The second cause of their external discouragement was repression, and we see that in verse 7 and 8. So what does repression actually mean? I had to look this one up. Well, repression is the action of subduing someone or something by force. And that could be physical force. It could be just more of a kind of a force that's just there, opposing them, maybe not laying hands on them. But the enemies had moved from being bothered by the Jews to being very angry with the Jews. And we're going to see that. I remember growing up in Scurry, Texas, if you want to look it up one day. Scurry is, I think, also a disease. I'm not sure. No? Scurvy. Yeah, that's right. I've yet to see another town named Scurry, but one day maybe I'll find a town named Scurry. But growing up in Scurry, I remember growing up, and I always had trouble learning in a school setting. And I always had trouble understanding or being able to focus in that kind of setting. And back then, they just assumed I was not able to learn or incompetent of learning. And so I was put in remedial classes growing up, and even through middle school and high school, I was still in remedial classes, and it was a little bit different. We didn't have our own special class by any means. It was more of I just got special attention in the class, and I remember having that placed on me at a very young age. And I remember one day, it was probably my junior year, maybe it was sophomore year of high school. Everyone's kind of starting to look at what's next after high school, you know, like most people do. And we're like, well, we're going to go to college and so on and so forth. And we're talking with the counselors about what we need to do, all that stuff. And I remember having a conversation with the school counselor there growing up in high school. And I was like, well, I'm planning on going to college. And she looked at me and was like, really? Because right now, you're not taking any classes that are going to get you into college. We didn't put you in any classes that are going to get you into college. And I was like, well, why not? And they had labeled me and put me into this category because I wasn't able to learn in the way that they were teaching. And I found I've been able to learn many other ways since then. And I have not let that really define me. But I see this repression in my life. Like, I see that. And it wasn't a forceful, it was more of a holding me back in a way that I didn't even realize they were doing it until I asked the question. And I share that because it kind of exposes a little bit of my past. And I want to share a little bit of who I am and how I am able to be where I am today. But getting back to Nehemiah here, the enemies were moved from being bothered, and that they were just very angry with the Jews. So they started to go in a different way. They all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. No longer were their jokes good enough. They had to actually put some muscle behind it now. They actually had to do something about it. Warren Wiserby wrote, "God's people sometimes have difficult working together, but the people of the world have no problem uniting in opposition to the work of the Lord." Okay? Sadly, it's true. It's hard to get the church together sometimes, but anytime there's something coming against the Lord, that brings people right together. So we see the enemies kind of coming from all directions here in verse 7. And that's what's up on the screen. So the reference in verse 7 are there's 4 points to the compass, really. And we see Sanballat and the Samaritans on the north, Ashdod on the west, Tobiah and the Ammonites on the east, and Geshem and the Arabs to the south. The workers were surrounded and lived in constant fear of being ambushed. Okay, church? And this was a true fear. Next week, we'll kind of see how they continued on this work. And they continued by working with one hand and protecting themselves with the other hand. And that's the visual that Nehemiah gives us. But this was what was happening to them. They were being attacked from all sides. So, as I close here this morning, like the workers on the wall, we as believers will face discouragement. It's going to happen. If we know how to defeat external discouragement, then we will be able to better serve. Better serve who? Better serve God. Be used by God. One more story for you. George Washington, after suffering a major defeat at Brandy's Wine Creek and Germantown, finds himself facing one of the worst winters in history, okay? He has 12,000 troops left to fight the entire British army, and winter's howling breath is beating down his neck. He goes into a desolate, barren valley at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, to spend the winter and try to recuperate from the stinging defeat that the enemy had given him. There's no shelter for his men at Valley Forge. His army is naked and starving to death as old man discouragement comes to sow his seed of defeat. It looks like a total defeat. And it appears that the new nation, the United States of America, will be annihilated by the bitter winter in the British Army. Okay? We want to talk about discouragement. George Washington was discouraged. But there was a man in his camp. His name was Baron von Steuben. He trains and shapes the army into a fighting force. He encourages them to get up and go on. They win a major victory at Saratoga, then on to Yorktown. So, after every discouragement, there's always a victory if we only believe. Okay, church? This reminds me of some of the doubters, of some of the major accomplishers in their day, major individual accomplishments. I'll share some of those with you. One person said, "He will never amount to anything." This was a Munich schoolmaster who was talking about Albert Einstein. Another one said, "You ain't going nowhere, son. You ought to go back to driving a truck." Well, that was Elvis Presley's first manager. Another one said, "You are too stupid to learn anything." Well, this was numerous teachers of Thomas Edison. And then the last one is, "You're fired. You're not creative enough." And that was the head of Missouri newspaper who was talking to Walt Disney. Okay? So don't let those around you affect how you handle discouragement. Let us take truth in 1 Timothy 1:7. Okay? And I have that on the screen. "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but one of power, love, and sound judgment." And that is the truth for discouragement that we can hold on to, right? God will lead us if we only let Him, church. If you will stand with me as we close with the song this morning.